The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Bewildered, that's the term they use for today's average college student. These are the professors talking. This is a dean of one of the leading institutions in the east coast of the United States of America who says today's young college student, washed up at 25, wondering about suicide, wondering what's it all about, where is he going, why is he here, he says bewildered is the word to use for them. He describes today's college generation by saying they're bewildered. They don't seem to know who they are, where they're going, or why. He's talking about college students. He's talking about the fine young men and women of America who are in today's educational institutions, the hope, the prayers, and the dreams of their parents and of all of the elderly society around them for the future of America and maybe of the whole world. What do we really need today? Well, probably many people would say more graduates, more educated people, more lawyers, more doctors, more scientists, more specialists, more technicians, more people who are really educated in some of the special fields of our glittering, glamorous technological age. Yet when they go to these educational institutions where knowledge is exploding at such a fantastic rate, they get turned off. They get frustrated. They become bewildered. Now, I think it's interesting that a college dean can describe the young people in his own institution as bewildered and not knowing who they are, where they're going, and why they are on the earth.
When isn't that what education would be expected to teach them?
Well, to go on, a Wisconsin psychiatrist said that many students today are alienated, washed up at 25. You imagine, you know, you've heard of people about 67, I'm all through, too late to start over. Somebody 45 or 50, been through the wars, maybe had a couple of bankruptcies and a marriage failure or something, says, I've had it, I'm through. But now we're talking about students, early 20s, washed up, take drugs, smoke pot, drop out. They seem apathetic, disinterested, disillusioned, unhappy, thwarted, and frustrated with no real interest in the future. Now, this was a psychiatrist, a Dr. Seymour L. Hallett, and he said this what's the point of it all attitude is usually acquired in college. It's disturbing to society and the parents to ask, where did we go wrong? What did we leave out of his education? What went wrong with it all? In an interview, this Dr. Hallett said his 9 years of treating students. So he's a psychiatrist who had the proverbial leather couch and was, you know, talking to students. And a lot of students have to go for psychiatric help. Of course, I can understand why. If I had to wade through some of the textbooks that they do, I might go try to find help myself. And the professors do, I think, sometimes too. But he'd spent 9 years in treating students. And he said these 9 years it indicated to him that alienation was a new and increasingly serious problem. He said it represented about half the students seeking psychiatric help at the university, although it constituted only a tiny proportion of college students, and probably less than 4% in a severe form for them to really need help. He defined alienation as an estrangement from the values of one's society and family. Well, how do you define education? What is education? I say education has lost its way, that educational institutions do not know what they stand for, why they exist, what they should teach, how they should teach it, and why it should be taught in the first place. It's in a state of constant flux, a state of constant change, a state of constant ferment. An educational institution today, a large university, can be a kind of a vast collection of buildings in which are housed a vast assortment of different human beings with a vast array or disarray of different and oftentimes contradictory ideas. Sometimes a class can contradict itself. Now, in these diametrically opposed studies, on the same institution, for example, you could have, maybe if it's a church-oriented college, they could have a graduate school in theology. They could have somebody taking theological courses and studying things like apologetics, which means, I guess, we're sorry, we apologize, we believe in the Bible. Or things like exegesis, and all of these other terms like eschatology, which nobody understands, probably. And of the same institution, they have got neurology, and they've got geophysics, and they've got all the sciences and all the abstracts of them. They've got mathematics and all the abstracts of those. They've got chemistry, literature, physics, data processing, communications. And some of these are completely diametrically opposed to each other, And even within some of the courses, some of the texts do not agree, and the professors may disagree violently between themselves in the same field. So what these students are getting, eventually, is a kind of a smorgasbord of confusing ideas without any clear-cut main thrust or stated principles or goals toward which they are aimed or toward which they're headed. There is no specific clear-cut goal they're trying to achieve. It's an assembly line process. They go to this vast disarray of confusing misinformation to be given a smorgasbord of conflicting ideas, and they come out from it and you say, what did you learn in college? Well, I graduated summer come here or whatever, and I specialized in literature, or I specialized in history, or perhaps I majored in science or something else. And you ask them, well, do you understand what humanity is all about? Do you know why man is on the earth? Do you know where he came from? Do you know where he's going? And the answer is no. Now we find that psychiatrists who treat students, and deans who deal with them daily, and professors who teach them in classrooms, are amazed that students do not know these things. So this one psychiatrist who said they were alienated, they were estranged from one's own society, was putting his finger on the core of the problem because he was dealing with students. But you see, education is supposed to be that attempt by society, by the parents, by the formal education, that attempt by the adult generation to instill inside the minds of the younger generation the older generation's philosophies, ideals, principles, lies, myths, historical twists and misinterpretations, and history is largely interpretive. I think we ought to agree, and I think we ought to perhaps be honest to say that education varies differently in each nation. That history, for example, is taught differently, completely differently. Take World War II as an example. History is taught differently in Japan than in Germany. It's taught differently in German universities than it is in Italian universities. It's taught differently there than it is in Britain. And Britain and the United States teach it differently from different points of view. So history is not, as some may have been led to assume, the mere dissemination of factual historical knowledge, events, and circumstances which took place, so much as it becomes a largely interpretive and an artistic attempt to sometimes virtually discard what might have taken place in an attempt to encourage students to believe what could or should have taken place, in order to aggrandize one's own personal, group instincts, racial, nationalistic, chauvinistic, or what have you, isms or desires. So education has all sorts of definitions. I think one is that attempt by the older generation to instill in the younger generation the older generation's values, ideals, philosophies, and principles. And along with it, its superstitions, its myths, its lies, its fables, and its irrational hypocrisy. Secondly, education really is any concerted attempt by anybody to influence the behavior of anybody else. Thirdly, education is a process by which people learn in any given community, whether 2, 3, 5, or 3 million. Peacefully, if any group of people, whether 3 or 3 million, are going to live together for any period of time, then education is that lifestyle which eventually is agreed upon by that group, no matter what its size, to enable them to live together peacefully for any given period of time. Education is any system by which any people comes to inculcate the culture or the civilization, if it can be called by that dignified term, or the lifestyle of that society. What then are the goals of education today in the modern Western world? They don't know. The universities don't know, and the professors don't know. To get back to what the psychiatrist said, it was just about exactly like the other man, the dean, said, and I'll show you in just a moment what that was. The students are uncertain about some of the biggest issues for all of humanity.
John Riley watched the sandcastle the little girl had built melt away as the relentless tide once again claimed its territory. Too bad they don't last, he mused. It reminded him of a sad song he knew about dreams people have which never come true. He wondered about the plans he and his wife Sandy had made as a young bride and groom. Their life had been good. Their children were grown now and gone. What lay ahead? Just dandling the grandchildren and waiting for the end? Is that all there is? Does life have a point? John knew the uneasy questions. He could know the positive answers. Sooner or later, we all wonder what life's all about. Is all we do in this life a mere sandcastle? Or is there more? One of the keys to fulfillment in life is a sense of purpose, to build something that will last. The Ambassador College free booklet, Why Were You Born?, gives the true answer to this age-old question and reason to human existence. Is life only a sandcastle? Read this vital booklet, Why Were You Born? It will be sent free upon your request. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
Isn't it amazing that professors and leaders of big universities decry the lack of knowledge in the minds of students about who the students are, why they were put on the earth, and where they are going, when one would assume that's what education exists to teach? I mean, that's what it stands for. That's what it's all about. You go to an educational institution, you would assume, to certainly learn how we got on the earth and where we came from and why we're here. Somebody graduates and maybe is majored in mathematics. You can say, fine, beautiful. You learn how to count how many people there are on the earth before you learned why they were here in the first place. They graduate, let's say, with a major in biology. Great. You learned about how our bodies worked before you found out why they worked that way. They graduate in a major of languages. Fine, you learn to communicate with two or three other races of people before you learn why there are different races and what we're doing on the earth anyhow and where our eventual destiny is going to take us, where we're going and where all of humanity is headed and whether or not we have any opportunity to survive. Why shouldn't the universities concern themselves with these big issues of life? Why do they ignore them? Why do they avoid them? Why do they say this is not our business? And why do they insist it is not in their province to teach or to educate the whole man? That students' morals, they say, students' inner lives, students' mental tranquility and peace of mind, students' alienation or disorientation, the hang-ups, the problems, the emotional problems of human beings that come to the institution are just not their problem. It seems they like to divorce themselves from any of the attitude problems, any of the emotional problems, and say our only business is to disseminate knowledge. But what the students do with that knowledge, how that knowledge affects them, or the lack of knowledge, what they do with their spare time, whether they live in coeducational dorms or elsewhere, is none of our business. This is what they say. Well, to go on with what this one psychiatrist who had treated students in universities for about 9 years had to say about it. He said, characteristically, the alienated student lives for the present. Well, doesn't everybody? I mean, what makes him so strange when they say the alienated student lives for the present? So does his professor. So does everybody he knows. So does practically everybody on the face of the earth. Unless they have some broader, clearly defined, transcendental, spiritual goal toward which they press, unless there is some great and vast purpose in their lives toward which they continually press and strive, then everybody is living for the present. I don't see why it's a shocker. A psychiatrist who says he finds that alienated students are just living for the present, because all of society is living for the present. The entire problem of pollution is the proof that society is living for the present. The hindsight is 20/20, and the foresight is something like 620/10, if that's possible, which it isn't. Living for the present is why we have a modern era of technology and gadgetry that threatens to choke us, strangle us, or bury us in our own trash and exterminate us before we had a chance to find out why we live in the first place. Well, enough of that. He said he lives for the present with emphasis on immediate gratification, but gradually erodes the student's capacity to feel compassion. Why, that sounds like not just an alienated student, but it sounds to me like the government. Sounds like he's talking about the government, maybe even half of the churches. You know, they lose the capacity to feel compassion. Why, I could do program after program to tell you of the hundreds of cases of people going right by somebody in the highway. Did you see the Firestone ad? An ad about tires. I think they had steel in tires. and it shows the backs of about a dozen people. You do see the back of them, you know. And it has a question there. What would you do if you saw someone with a flat tire? And all the answers there. I'd go right on by. I'd never stop. Well, I might if it was a little old lady. And all these answers. So, therefore, the ad reads, you ought to buy this particular brand of tires to prevent you from getting stranded out here with all these busy cars going by. I could do program after program to tell you of all of the proofs about how people have lost any kind of capacity to feel compassion for their fellow man. So I don't understand why a psychiatrist would say this is a special exception of alienated students who are really a phenomenon at age 25. They feel all washed up because they're in college. It seems like it's a symptom of mankind. So Dr. Halleck gave this profile of the alienated student. I guess that makes the government an alienated student. Quote, he is frustrated with reality, believing that it is futile to try to change the external world. He turns to LSD, marijuana, etc., to try to change his inner world instead. He is easily distracted. Imagine that. What's our attention lapse generally in television? Some people once figured out it was something like 20 seconds, the average American. That's about the attention span, about 20 seconds. If you don't do something different, cross your eyes, do something, hold their attention, you're going to lose it. Their minds wander. It's getting to that point. Of course, that's the way a lot of us were allowed to grow up. He is easily distracted. He is promiscuous. The alienated student is promiscuous? Well, you know, you could look around the society and say, well, aren't the professors? And isn't practically everybody in society? You know, that word has a broad application. People are pretty promiscuous with the way they spend your tax dollars, too. He is rebellious. Well, so are kids. And so is practically everybody, when you get right down to it, rebellious and hostile as a part of human nature. And he is unable to concentrate or to study. He, this washed-up, thwarted student, is unable to communicate with his parents or with other adults and is profoundly distrustful of them. He tends to become suddenly and severely depressed for little reason and may even attempt suicide. And that's interesting. I don't know if I have that one statistic right here, but yes, I do. Suicide, this from the Insider's newsletter some time ago. It may have changed. These may have risen a little bit now to make this not quite so accurate. But suicide, at that time, was the nation's 10th highest killer. And it was second only to accidents, automobile mostly, as a cause of death among United States college students. So here was suicide, the second highest cause of death for the college age group. Now that has got to be some kind of a yardstick for measuring the success or the failure of modern day educational institutions. When students are alienated, thwarted, defeated, frustrated, turned off, dropping out, seeking for the answer inside themselves, having no real long range goal, to live only for the present, to feel comfortable and happy in the moment, and who are contemplating, often as not, suicide. He went on to say then, he, this student, is uncertain as to who he is, where he comes from, and where he is going. Well, so are his professors, and so are the people who teach him, and so were his parents who bore him, and so are most of all the people on the face of this earth. Here we are on a vast, beautiful spaceship taking a journey. When you wake up, you've traveled approximately 8,000 miles from where you were when you went to sleep. What's the trip all about? Where are you going? Why are you here? Should not education deal with these biggest of all questions?
For 40 years, the Plain Truth magazine has been supplying the missing dimension in education. The Plain Truth is published monthly as a facet of Ambassador College's in-the-home educational service. It maintains an editorial policy that incorporates this missing dimension in education, biblical understanding. The Plain Truth, timely, informative articles, deal with subjects covering success in business, recreation, politics, religion, farming. Each issue not only documents the state of today's society, but offers hope for a better world tomorrow. To serve its more than 6 million readers, The Plain Truth is published in 5 languages and is available without price or obligation to all who request it. Join the growing worldwide readership. Request your subscription to the magazine with a 40-year history of educational service to mankind. The Plain Truth. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales, 2001.
People have speculated for years about this thing of human life, and of course all of our philosophy books and our books on psychology deal with this subject, and we don't want, we say, in those fields to get into metaphysics or into the spiritual, so of course people erase from their minds any idea that there might really be an answer in the book that is called the Bible, because we know that the Bible, they say, can be interpreted in any way you'd like. That's what people say. People say, well, you can prove anything by the Bible. Now, they don't understand what that statement by itself implies. Obviously, you can't prove anything by the Bible, because if you could, then one thing disproves another thing, which means it's completely inconsistent, and therefore you're not faced with proof anyhow. But we don't seem to reason this way correctly, and so it is not true that you can prove anything by the Bible at all. But you can attempt to by twisting what the Bible says. The Bible is a handbook about human nature. It's a book that tells us why we're on the earth and where we came from and why we're here, why we're taking this trip, what it's all about, what our goals in life ought to really be. And I'm not talking about a soul factory. I'm not talking about the kind of an attitude or an approach toward the Bible that you've ever heard before in your entire life. I'm not talking about traditional mainstream theology. I am not talking about the churches of this world and their superstitions, their mythology, their beliefs in nice dressed up modern day space age paganism. I'm talking about what the Bible really says. Now, the Bible does really say, over in Hosea 4 and verse 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you. Now here we are in the midst of a knowledge explosion. I mean, doctors will say that in practice, and it's, I wish they'd quit practicing and get on to doing it. Seriousness. But anyhow, that, I'm just kidding. But they say when they're in practice that 5 years go by and doctors in specialized fields would really need to go back and spend a couple or 3 years just to catch up. They need to spend 1 year in college studying for every 1 year that they're in practice, because so much happens. There's such a knowledge explosion. And knowledge tends to be accumulative. It has been said that about 90% of all the scientists in specialized fields who have ever lived are alive today. That illustrates the point. About 90% who have ever lived in specialized scientific fields are alive today. So here's this fantastic explosion. Yet, it shows in the Bible, and I think you can agree with this if you take any rational appraisal of one of the big problems of humankind. We don't have the kind of knowledge. It's not a matter of the quantity of knowledge, because the quantity is evident. We have a vast quantity of knowledge, especially the knowledge in specialized technologies, men's footprints on the moon, fantastic things. I'm privileged to use a computer to fly a modern jet airplane, which we took a trip in this program one time, when I was dealing with evolution and with whether or not something can just put itself together like that. Here's this inertial navigational system. Fantastic. It just boggles your mind as to how that can be done. And the whole world, its latitudes and longitudes, are fed into this computer, and then automatically it will measure one point to the other. All you've got to do is feed in the correct latitude and longitude, and it can solve all the other problems. But you know, all of our computerized information, all of our knowledge explosion, has not told us how to live at peace with each other. It has not told us how to have happy, fulfilled, abundant, warm, wonderful lives. It has not told us how to get rid of all of our pollution problems. It hasn't told us how to be kind, how to be sweet to each other. It hasn't told us why we're on the earth and where we're going in the future. It hasn't told us how to have happy marriages, how to rear obedient, wonderful, disciplined, and loving children. It hasn't told us how to live at peace in all of our different colors and races. It hasn't brought us to that one true religion. There are hundreds of differing religions. Now, I'm talking about what the Bible says, not what religion says. Religion is one thing, and in my definition, religion is a man-made kind of a gradual, evolutionized development of, man's own principles and man's own philosophies and man's own weird religious ideas. When I say religion, I don't mean the Bible. I mean what men do despite the Bible and in the face of the Bible, what men try to do to the Bible and what men do because they don't agree with the Bible. I don't mean what the Bible says when I say religion. So here's this obvious answer. But on the one hand, we're in the midst of a knowledge explosion. We've learned how to kill ourselves now, more than 50 times over, when once would be quite enough. More than 50 worlds like ours could be obliterated now by the combined force of the stockpiling of nuclear energy by the Soviet Union and the United States. And we came to this point before we ever learned why we're here in the first place. We really did. So he says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. We don't have the right kind of knowledge. Now, I went on in this book, in this chapter, in the fourth chapter of Hosea, in verse 6, to say, seeing you have forgotten, so there's something we have omitted. We have forgotten, according to the Scripture, not according to what churches teach now or religion or anything, but according to what the Scripture says. If we're wrong, if we've made a mistake and God is not dead, if our just-in-case religions are no good and there is a God out there after all, if maybe there is a God, and of course I've proved there is, and I've proved it on this program, a series of programs on evolution and the great big missing flaws and the gaps that disprove evolution, that it is not true, then this may be an accurate statement if there is a God. He says, seeing you have forgotten the law of your God, I will forget your progeny. I'll forget those who come along in succeeding generations. I'll forget your children. It looks like the world is just out here all by itself, kind of forgotten, doesn't it? I mean, when was the last time you saw God get busy and really shake up those people over there in China? I mean, when was the last time God really got a hold of the Kremlin and took it like a rag doll? When was the last time God walked into Parliament in Britain and really straightened them out? When was the last time, so far as you know, that God reached down into your life and said, hold on a minute now. I want to teach you a few things that are good for you. When was the last time in your life you consciously, with deliberate aforethought, put into practice one of the laws of God? What's the eighth one? Ninth? Fourth? Seventh? What's the second commandment? Which laws is he talking about? Does the world obey the laws of God? No. Does the world know why the world is here? Do we have the correct quality of knowledge that we ought to have for our very survival? The answer is no. Well, next time I'll show you how it all began, where the very roots of our educational systems are found. Write for these booklets. This is Ambassador College, all about an educational institution that is different, and the booklet, Why Were You Born? And while you're at it, be sure to write for the booklet, Just What Do You Mean, Born Again? You've heard me talk about the example of Jesus and Nicodemus, of what he said to that leader of the Jews of that day. He looked at him and he said, you must be born again. Don't be too sure you know what born again means. Many professing Christians sincerely believe they have been born again. That's their privilege. They can believe that. I've always advocated the hatpin test. Just find a place where you don't think it's going to give you too much pain. See if you can get a drop of blood out of there. And if you can, you're just as fleshly as I am. I think you'll find that this booklet goes right down the line from the Bible. It's free of charge and no price. All you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.